Conscious Business, evolving the world of enterprise.
Episode 23, we need leadership, not just heroic leaders. How does business need to change to meet the growing complexity of the modern global world? And what does development have to do with it? This week, we continue our conversations with the author of Spiral Dynamics, Dr. Don Beck, and discuss the emergence of a more complex way of doing business.
Join the dialogue on ReframeAmerica.com. And now prepare to be transformed. It seems like there's such an organicity to the model that you're using. And it's not that the idea is to be organic. It's that you're paying close attention to every factor that goes into making up any institution or culture or individual's life and trying to find a better way to make that process flow, to let the process grow. And it strikes me that as we attain higher levels of development, more comprehensive views of the world, we're more and more able to do this. We're more and more able to find an appropriate fit between our lives and the cultures that we're living in, the institutions that we interact with. Can you say a little bit more as we reach those higher stages of development, what it looks like?
Well, yes, I don't want to suggest there's a woo-woo magical factor here that's in the air. only a few people can breathe it and detect it. As these complex value systems have emerged, changing our worldviews and our priorities, and as we have more money in the bank and can afford to begin, I guess, act in a much more civil fashion, then it has released a tremendous amount of humanity and organic earthliness in us as humans. Well, we're not hired hands anymore. We're part of total living, and we bring our total self to the work environment. And if you're in Boulder, that means you can also bring your dogs.
More than yourself.
My dog, Chessie, reminds me that in Boulder, I couldn't own him because your city council passed a law that you can only be a dog's guardian, which he points out to me.
Of course, the
Japanese taught us quite a bit about this, and Deming, who we should have listened to, but he wouldn't, the Japanese did, also, was plotting a whole new territory about responsibility of people, and if they work harder in productivity sessions, they should be benefited from that in paychecks, as opposed to the assets and the profit going to top-level people. So often we buy into part of the model and process, but not the whole thing. And I think more and more around the term of holism that we're beginning to see that if everyone benefits from something, everyone works harder. And so some of these very, very simple processes that probably our grandfathers understood better than we do, are certainly now beginning to characterize this quest for what's the term, greatness, from service to significance, I think is a major transformation.
That's great.
So I can be successful but not significant.
Right. Yeah, I'm hearing that using your process at any stage of development, there should be some unleashing of energy that occurs in the individual because of this more appropriate fit, because they're taken into consideration, because things in their environment work in a way that they flow together. But I'm also hearing you saying that as a person attains to a more comprehensive view, which we'll often describe as a higher level of development, even more energy gets unleashed. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And I learned that lesson from working with the National Football League. On how a coach keeps the team into prime during the preseason and 16 games regular season and then playoffs, because many coaches thought that there is a well that is limited, that you only have X amount of energy, so you better spend it wisely early season. And in effect, it's just the opposite. We have the ability to renew and to find new sources of energy and insight far beyond what any of us realize. So I saw that principle operating, and I see it in so many companies today. Seemingly can keep rising to the occasion, regardless of the obstacles that they confront. And every time they they make that ratchet to more complex systems, new wellsprings of energy suddenly are tapped into. Mm. And all of a sudden, the whole organization goes through a major shift. I'm seeing that more and more today.
It's great. So you're just scanning these organizations that you're working with for leverage points to unleash that energy?
Yes. And, of course, I would rather in the initial design of it, plant seeds then.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's much easier than, if you have a mature workforce, a seasoned workforce already in place and you're in crisis of some kind. I've also worked a lot with Itzhak Adesis in corporate life cycles. Don't know if you're aware of his work.
No.
He's been doing this, I think, 50 or so years. Mm. He's been able to track the life cycle of companies from the entrepreneurial stage to a series of different stages requiring in each different supervisory management vitamins, he calls them, as they shift, as the company becomes more mature, moving into what he calls go-go and adolescence and then into prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then too often tips over into aging. Goes into aging, all the entrepreneurs leave it, and you have the accountants and the attorneys who shrink it further until all the spirit and soul is gone from it. So his models show how to recapture that, after that has happened. It happens to a lot of companies.
It sounds like a great model. It seems like you're watching a number of different things like that. There's the organizational life cycle, where in that cycle an organization is at any point in time, the developmental stage of the individuals within it, the developmental stage of the culture without it, the simple environment in which it's working, the level of fit amongst all of these things. What are some of the other factors that you're looking for?
Well, you have to go back to that initial factor, which is the how people are making decisions about their product or service. Are there changes in the marketplace, in the understanding of products? Because unless that is monitored very carefully, and we put in what are called vital signs monitors in a company, which are floor-to-ceiling video screens in which all the critical indicators can be simultaneously placed and watched.
Wow.
And sometimes overlay on GIS data if it's an entity with multiple centers.
Hmm.
One can see everything instantly. And so if there all of a sudden are expressions of illness in a company or sick leave somewhere, and then you, before you knee-jerk a response to that, you look what are the other indicators that are overlaid on that place to see if there isn't some kind of pattern. So you're able to see everything at once. And so in the past, we've had gatekeepers who keep executives from knowing a lot about the organization, and so they're often blind.
Mm.
But when you use this technology, you're able to see more, see it quickly, see options. Everyone see it at the same time, and so you're monitoring, just like in health sciences, you're monitoring the vital signs.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the first evidence of problems.
Yeah.
So you can act in a preventative fashion.
Yeah, so it seems like what you've been talking about this whole time is that businesses that you work with and you've seen do really amazing things in the world are becoming conscious of more information, either their vital signs in the business or their purpose and how to reward their employees in interesting ways that generate new possibilities. Could you speak to the myth that business only becomes conscious at second tier or at a level of development like this pluralistic level, just a little bit more, just to go into that deeper?
Well, these are things which have been invisible to us. They've been going on for some time in companies. We didn't have the eyes to see them or the models to understand them or the solutions to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, the left hand wasn't knowing what the right hand was doing. The salespeople were not connected to the production people or to the marketing people. Everything was the old term silo. Was acting independently from each other with only conversations on the golf course, providing some kind of way to connect them. And we have learned the hard way, and the Japanese taught us for sure that lesson, that one cannot manage in that environment anymore because everything is connected to everything else, and you have to do a lot more pre-planning than in the past. And the old cowboy mentality, being ride with a 7th cavalry to solve a problem, you know, it's just so dated. And that you have to have only the experts who know anything about anything else. And that's simply not relevant anymore because of the way that information and emails have suddenly empowered everybody across the entire organization. So we are the victim of our successes. and we simply haven't kept our solutions slightly ahead of tomorrow for our problems. And that means it requires a creative energy and complementary teams is a term Itzhak Adesis uses. Not single heroic individuals all the time, but to build that capacity with high levels of what he calls mutual trust and respect are more and more important today to handle very complex issues that quickly arise today on our radar scope, even over weekends. So that kind of milieu in which we find ourselves cannot be solved by traditional management practices.
Yeah.
And I still find a lot of people try to do culture change and have no idea what they're doing. That's why probably 98% of the attempts of culture change have backfired on people.
Yeah.
What are they doing wrong?
They're working on reform versus transformation. They're working cosmetically with quick fix solutions. They identify single causes and can't see the mesh of systems operating simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to engage people who have deep value system codes and recognize what made the company successful. They try to overlay solutions like car washes from Harvard or Yale or London School of Economics and try to jam it down the organization. And those kind of solutions, well advertised from Harvard Business Review, but totally inept at dealing in realities.
Yeah.
All of this.
Other than that, I'm not opinionated.
All of this suggests the need for a leader that's able to see more, that's able to comprehend more things that are going on in a business, able to comprehend more things going on within the individuals in the business, which implies a higher level of development. Do you think that the leaders need to have a higher level of development?
Well, I have to, you know, very quickly say what's required is leadership to do that. It may not reside in a single person anymore.
Yeah.
That may be asking too much of frail humans to have that kind of scope. And so it is possible, certainly in some cases, to find individuals like a John Mackey and there and many others like him. But he has an excellent team of people around him that he has carefully selected. So he'd go off hiking as he does every August, you know, for 6 weeks and be out in the wilderness and not worry because he's built the kind of structure through careful selection, you know, where the whole system just kind of maintains itself. And so that's the key to it. Yet there are times in transformation when the need for visionary leaders is certainly important, and I think that's true today. I think we're going through major shifts.
Yeah.
So we're searching for what Howard Bloom calls diversity generators versus conformity enforcers.
Nice. So I can't help but contrast the tone with which you speak about your work with the tone that I've witnessed at Ken Wilber's Integral Institute, which seems to have a tremendous emphasis on getting higher in terms of stages of development. What I've seen in that culture is a whole slew of pathologies in terms of competition for the most being the most personally developed, in terms of pressures and frictions within the system that seem to have been related both to an highly innovative entrepreneurial model, but also those pressures to be more than the system really is. And I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about what you've either seen in that version of this model playing itself out, or some pathologies to watch out for when the model does play itself out.
Well, these are pretty sensitive issues for me, since I'm really not part of that now. And you hit on one of the reasons for it, that I heard so many people talking about second tier who had no idea what it meant, as if it's some kind of competitive urge that they have to be more second tier than somebody else. And when you look at the kinds of people drawn into it, they're that tend to be pretty young, I think pretty naive, quite frankly. Not a lot of white-haired experienced like me who haven't been down the track and dealt with reality and budgets and serious conflict. But, you know, that's simply a nature of some movements that kind of spin off like that into more of a reincarnation thinking that there's some kind of ultimate state to which we are trying to aspire, and who gets to be there first gets all the rewards. And that's simply a blue system, quite frankly, driven by orange competitiveness. It's really not what I envision or Graves envision, like seventh and eighth level. It's even talk about third tier, if you heard that talk or not, is really pretty naive because it disregards the whole nature of how systems form and simply tries to add on top of the Graves technology and our application of a piece from Eastern religions, I think. And it just doesn't fit it.
Mm.
But, you know, they are who they are, and over time, I think they'll have some serious internal conflicts over it. But I wish them well, but
yeah.
What they're doing and saying is not relevant to what I'm doing.
Oh, wow. Wow, so it really feels like a very different sort of thing at this stage.
Yeah, it does to me, because even to the point of the all quadrants, all levels model, which we were using with the Graves technology, is biopsychosocial systems,
mm-hmm.
back in the early 1970s and 1980s. And I tried to express to Ken the importance of putting the spire right in the vortex of it as the change engine, and I never got him to be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost a new Flatlander system that doesn't have the vitality of the change dynamic within its essence. Now, this is my opinion.
Yeah.
And there are some other issues about the way he continues to use the language of spiral dynamics without the understanding of its basic concepts that trouble me a great deal. But
yeah.
I guess if you're Einstein and you're the guru, then you can do as you damn well please. But what we do and think here is not important to him, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So you respect what he's done, and he's, in his book, A Theory of Everything, you know, he really announced the amazing spiral, and it's given us great global visibility, so I'm always mm-hmm. grateful to him for that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But we are on different courses, for sure, with no contact between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really emphasizing that it's not a contest to develop, but that there's a healthy way to, for every level of development, to be in the world. And a business that wants to be conscious doesn't necessarily need to take all of its employees up higher levels of development, but actually meeting them where they're at in an elegant way and drawing out their strengths is the best way to go.
You said that extremely well. And if and when life conditions and experiences trigger more complex thinking, to respect it, to legitimize it, to support it. But the idea that people are not okay unless they are in some way thinking at higher systems. The elegance of people doing jobs daily here, even in Denton, Texas, and the police department and fire department, I just have the greatest respect in the world for.
Mm.
Because lightning hit our house about 5 months ago, we had a serious fire damage, and the way the firemen responded was most responsible and sensitive and bordering on spirituality.
Mm-hmm,
but,
absolutely.
But they wouldn't understand anything about higher order levels or any of that. It just wouldn't occur to them.
Yeah.
But it would not be necessary for them to do that. I mean, and so to respect humanity at the levels in which it has developed, because I could still hear Claire Graves saying, "Don, you can't change people. All you can do is relate what you're doing to their natural motivational flow."
Mm.
Because people can't be until they are. And so that's why, of course, I learned that working with Zulus. My Zulu name is Amizi Muti. And let me tell you, there's spirituality in that purple band like you would not believe. So, I mean, you know, that's what I've learned. But, you know, so many people today you're isolated either by their books or by the internet or the salons or something, and haven't been out in the so-called real world.
Yeah.
And so that's the education I would give them, I think. And coupled with a lot of insights from Ken's work over years, if you mesh all together, and there's great advantage in it. Mm-hmm. But to separate it out, you know, just produces some of the symptoms which you just talked about.
That's great. I really hear a paradox in what you're saying about we need to respect and honor all of these stages of development, all of these expressions of human life and how they play themselves out, and that there's beauty in all of them. And yet at the same time, we're living in an age of intensely interconnected information with a multiplicity of global problems that could destroy civilization as we know it and lead to massive suffering. And it seems like we have to be doing both simultaneously, both respecting and honoring all the multifold expressions of humanity, and at the same time trying to see more and comprehend more and fit it all together.
Yes, once again, you expressed that very well. And that lesson came home to me when I was doing crisis intervention training with the Dallas Police Department many years ago, and I was advising, you know, young police officers when they answer what I call Signal 6, Pop and Mama disputes, you know, using some of the Robert Clark of active listening. You feel blank because of blank, you know, to process that with them. And one of my young officers was doing that and got shot through the door and got killed.
Wow.
And so that brought the lesson to me, you know, that you can't just arm people with, you know, some of these more complex skills and place them in harm's way and think that you're doing good.
Yeah.
You know? And so that ability to recognize the life conditions people are facing and what they have to do to survive and prosper and honor that and help them do it better. And hopefully over time that will begin to activate more complex thinking in them, because it will, for sure. But it's just a note of realism and caution, you know, that was built in me from those experiences.
For commentary and information on my conscious coaching life and leadership services, check out ReframeAmerica.com.